This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Alison Milden,
Maurice Clark,
and I'm Vicky Marie Buchanan. So Maurice, welcome back.
Thank you.
Last episode you were talking about your lovely experiences at Newbury School and your principal getting out his violin and playing to everybody. Happy birthday.
Yes.
Tell us more about your what you enjoyed about school at that time.
I enjoyed the fact that I had access to books.
Mm.
I really, really loved reading and would read anything and everything that wasn't pinned down.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Mr. Holmes used to make sure he ordered extra books from the country library service because I read through everything so quickly that there was never enough books there in the classroom for me. So he always got extra. And
good man.
A very good man. And always encouraging.
Mm.
You know? And It was a good school environment for me as a kid. I mean, when I started there, the old school building was still there, the original building, and the school was going to be refurbished, and the two new classrooms and a staff room and an office and a library were all going to happen. And so I started out at that school in the original school building, the old wooden building, and my first teacher there was Mrs. Weld. She was married to the Weld of Weld Motors.
Oh, right.
Yes. That she was, what's the name? She's a Whitelock, Alison Whitelock. And so she was in her first year of teaching when she came to the school. And she was a wonderful school teacher, really good with the little kids. And, you know, we had really old school learning environment in there. There was like this raised up platform at the front that the teacher would be on with the big blackboard.
Chalk on the blackboard.
You've got it. And along the side of the wall were the chalkboards that we learned to write on.
Oh.
And we had to learn to write in chalk on those before we went to writing with a pencil.
Oh, on your book.
We had to learn to write on a chalkboard.
Wow, that would be quite hard, wouldn't it?
Well, apparently it is, but we just did it.
You did it, and it was fun.
Mm. You know, you got to play with the chalk and all that kind of stuff.
And you had exercise books to write into later?
No, not initially. Not until you'd mastered the forms on the wall. And then we went to, I can remember writing on slates at some
point
too. So they had old equipment there. This was 1966.
Gosh, that seems quite old.
They had old stuff. Then once we'd done that kind of stuff, moved to the big thick pencil.
I remember those.
I can't remember what size. Then we were writing on paper.
Right.
And you eventually graduated from the chalkboard to the slate to the paper and pencil to the finer pencil. When you got your HB pencil.
Yes.
HB, you were really precious. And once you'd got mastered all of that, you were then allowed to move to a fountain pen.
Yes, that's right.
Gosh, there was ink everywhere.
Yes.
I think one of the most exciting things were at the beginning of the year getting new exercise books, and you'd cover them
Yes.
Cover them. And
old wallpaper.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was just exciting.
Yes.
These lovely...
brand new books.
Pristine, clean books.
Yes. I can remember my most favourite wallpaper from that time. That in the old house at Newbury, at some stage, there must have been some redecoration. And when we moved in there as a family, they found these old rolls of wallpaper, and my favourite one was the one. It was a pink wallpaper with this beautiful embossed daisy pattern on it.
Oh, very nice.
Oh, I tell you, I thought I was the bee's knees when I went to school with books covered in the embossed new wallpaper. It was a really old wallpaper.
Yes,
I look back now, you know, it'd be worth a few squillion. But it was what we used to cover our books. And then the stick-on
Duracell, wasn't it?
Duracell came along. Banging on the table. getting all excited here, talking about my beautiful pink wallpaper.
So then you moved from Newbury to Pinnons, which would have been quite a jump.
That was a huge change because at the time Newbury's school was still quite a small school. There was probably no more than about 50 children there, and that was across all age ranges. And the decision had been made in a higher place that the school had to send its Form 1 and 2 pupils into the intermediate school in Palmerston North. And I've never forgotten my first day at Intermediate Normal, going in, and we had an assembly in what was the quadrangle, a big area, and you know, sort of I'd managed to catch the bus, get to school.
And you'd be catching the bus quite early, wouldn't you, to get there?
Yeah.
Like 7:30?
Not quite that early, but it was the a Rutherford's bus.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the other bus company in town. So the Rutherford's bus used to run between Palmerston North and Fielding, so you were catching the one coming back from Fielding.
Right.
And on the state highway outside the Cameron's place, across the road. So you had to get across the main highway and get on the other side of the road and catch the bus. That would take you into the bus depot that was down between the Presbyterian Church and the PDC.
And what's the PDC?
Oh, Church Street. So where the plaza is.
Oh,
where
the plaza
is now. You've still got the church there, and the Rutherford's bus company was in beside the church, and then there was a big old hotel there, and then you had the PDC.
Right.
And
the PDC was
the Premier Department Company.
Oh, right.
It was a cooperative. Yes.
Right.
One
of
the three.
The DIC, the PDC, Cranston and Cunningham.
Right.
Yeah, they were the three big department stores in town. And there was sort of one on each side. The PDC was on that Church Street side of the square. The DIC was on where the current library is now.
Okay.
Of course, that was Ross & Co. before
that. Yes, that's right.
Yes.
And the Collinson and Cunningham were on Broadway Avenue, where what's in there now, there's a whole lot of little shops in there now, but when that became Farmers, and then Farmers moved to this current site in the plaza, but that was a big old department store.
Those department stores, each one had a particular flavour that I think probably Ross and Co. saw itself as the more
upmarket.
So upstairs you could go to afternoon tea.
Yes,
it was all rosewood panelling, and you were served with by someone wearing a little black dress with white
pinafore.
That sort of thing.
Yeah. And they had in the DIC, because I knew it as the DIC by the time I came along, it had the old school elevator with an elevator attendant. And
The metal shutters.
And the PDC had a big tea rooms above it too. They looked out over the square, and the PDC tea rooms were quite
very
a popular
nice.
Place for people. PDC used to do all the school uniforms.
Yes. And it was seen, I think, as a sort of cheaper shop, things were, supposedly.
Because it was a cooperative.
And then Collinson and Cunningham was known for its central booking station.
Right.
Where you could go and buy tickets for the theatre, etc. But also you paid your money there, and it went into a little canister that shot up to the accountant.
Oh, yes, I remember those.
And your change came back.
Yes.
And, of course, Collinson and Cunningham was where the Christmas cave was, down underneath the building in the basement area. And that was the highlight of Christmas, was going to that and seeing the Christmas cave. It's quite a magical thing, actually. Now, of course, that's set up at Te Manawa.
Right.
It's moved there. It's nice that they've actually preserved some of those amazing pieces from there, because they date right back to the very beginning of Collinson and Cunningham, those pieces. Some of them are well over 100 years old now and still working and still enthralling small children.
Isn't that lovely? So from Pinnons then you adapted to the size. Was there any subjects or anything influencing you, or were you connecting with things that you'd developed already and taking it further?
Well, the reading continued. I used to pester the librarians, and I had my first year teacher there was Mr. Tom Kelleher. He's the brother of the late Pat Kelleher, who was a city councillor for many years. And Tom Kelleher he was a returned serviceman, and quite a few of the male teachers at the school at that time were returned servicemen, and so sometimes, particularly around Anzac Day, they would talk a little bit about the war and things like that. I mean, the one that did most of that was a gentleman called Mr. Rain. He was a bit older than some of the other ones. But you could, like you mentioned a little bit earlier, you could see how much of an influence World War II had on these men. And they now looking back with the benefit of hindsight as an adult, you could see that some of them were seriously damaged. Mr. Kelleher was a really neat teacher. He knew how to manage kids and manage the classroom and get the best out of each kid. And and from that class, I still have two very dear friends. Aww. So we have been friends now for over 50 years, and that. So I met two lifelong friends
from that experience. And Pinnons used to be was the hospital too during World War II. It was converted to the hospital.
Oh, really?
So they had to take the lessons out somewhere else while that period was on. So that's why the corridors are so wide and classrooms are big.
Well, now that I've got a grandchild there, it was really lovely. I had to go with her to the familiarisation thing, because her mum was working, so I went, and it was really lovely to see that some aspects of the school are still exactly the same. Like, they have not destroyed the wood panelling in the hallways, and the classrooms are still configured in the same way that they used to be, and the notice boards are still outside the rooms. I mean, there's been changes. There's been buildings added. You've got the marae in the centre of it. But even the old woodwork and metalworking rooms are still where they used to be.
Oh.
And the swimming pool hasn't moved. The old hall has gone.
Yes, to tea now.
But the actual feel of those corridors. Goodness gracious me! The one thing that I was a little sad about when I went back with my granddaughter was my classroom has gone.
Oh.
It's been subsumed into the whole office area. So,
oh, okay.
So there is no more room 8.
Oh.
Room 8 used to be our classroom. Right. It was Mr. Kelleher's room.
Right.
And in my second year there, Mr. Kelleher had retired.
Mm.
And so we got a new teacher, a chap that was straight out of Teachers College, Mr. Scott. And Mr. Scott had a very, very different approach to teaching to Mr.
Right.
Kelleher.
Ooh.
I mean, Mr. Kelleher told me my handwriting looked like a drunken farmer's fence post. Yeah. You know what you're like.
Drunken farmer's fence
post. I can imagine if somebody said that to a kid and kid at home wailing to their mum.
Oh, yeah.
And I sort of looked at it and go, yeah, you are a bit right. Because, you know, when you're at that stage when you're trying to develop your handwriting and such like, yes, drunken farmer's fence post. But Mr. Scott was a very different type of teacher to Mr. Kelleher. Mr. Kelleher was very old school, straight up and down and all that kind of stuff. Mr. Scott was trying out all sorts of new experimental stuff.
Okay. What year was this?
1974. And so he got us to make a carpet for the room out of carpet strips.
Ah.
That was part of his schoolwork, and he had
math.
And he had he didn't have desks. You were working off small tables and groups and things like that.
Mm.
Well, the uproar from the parents was really interesting, because it wasn't a proper classroom.
Right.
The children can't
be
learning. But the key thing I remember about him was he used to read books to us.
Right.
And he was very good
at
reading aloud, and he read The Hobbit.
Oh.
Well, you know, you could just visualise it as he was reading.
Yes.
He made The Hobbit come alive.
Right.
So after that, off to the town library I went to get the rest of the books in the series. I'd read them all before the end of the year. Anyhow, Mr. Scott only lasted there about 2 terms. I think the pressure from the parents was just too much.
Mm.
And we got a very stern woman teacher called Mrs. Scott, who on her very first day made it perfectly clear that she was in no way related to our previous teacher.
Right.
And so that second half of the year wasn't quite as much fun.
Mm.
But the principal at that time was Johann Bonnevie.
Oh, you're right.
And Johann Bonnevie was a very forward-thinking man, very articulate, very intelligent fellow. And he was making sure that Māori was integrated into the teaching. It was meant to be,
I have discovered in later years.
Well, he made sure it was happening. And one of my enduring memories from that time is my first ever public speech. It was in a whakorero competition and was in te reo Māori.
Wow.
So, because we all had to write a little speech about ourselves and deliver it. And I remember doing that.
Do you know they kept doing that right up to when I was there teaching? They were still doing that competition.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Bonnevie brought all of that in. And the other, there was a couple of other standouts. We had John Brebner as an art teacher.
Oh, he was a teacher's colleague.
Brebner of Brebner's Print, yes.
Yes, we had colleagues at Teachers College.
Oh.
He was a wonderful art teacher.
Mm.
Again, I think I was there at a very, very good time because there were these just really enthusiastic, motivated teachers at the school. And there was, you were also given the opportunity to try things out. Like Mrs. Nicholson, she was a Māori woman who took the special needs class. But Mrs. Nicholson was also fluent in reo and very engaged in her culture. And so she would offer a couple of lunchtimes a week the opportunity, if you wanted to go and learn like poi, stick games, things like that, she would do that. So it was at intermediate normal that my real interest in te ao Māori was nurtured along. And I remember wanting, when I left intermediate and going to high school, I wanted to learn Māori. I was a little bit ahead of my time, because I remember saying this to the principal at Freiburg High School and got you have the option of learning French, German or Latin.
I was going to say Latin. Mm.
If you want to learn Māori, you will have to do it on your own as a correspondent student in the library. Well, hello. How many kids at 13 are going to be able to do that because you knew you weren't going to get the support? Mm. So that was not a happening thing at that time. Mm. We also had one of the most impressive woodwork teachers. He was another returned serviceman, an older guy called Mr. Cyril Dredge. And Mr. Dredge, I tell you, he ran those classes. I don't know how he kept those naughty boys under control, but he did. And he just ran those classes so smoothly. Mm. And I still have pieces that I made in Mr. Dredge's woodwork classes. And, you know, when you look at them, the standard that we produced at back then, I could have had a job in furniture making after Mr. Dredge. Because you were taught, you did it by hand. You learned how to cut things out with the chisels and sand it and shape it. And
I was thinking that so much more hands-on, whereas it's not the machinery and the technology that there is nowadays.
Yeah. But also how wonderful that girls were.
Yes,
was the big thing in my time, that there was very specific girls cooking, boys woodwork.
That's right, yes.
Girls sewing, boys gardening.
Yes. Mr. Bonnevie wouldn't have a bar of that. He made sure that they all did. And I knew how to cook before I went to intermediate, and I remember the cooking teachers, and she was a bit of a harridan. Mm. Her nose got seriously out of joint because I knew how to cook. And she goes, what you do at home may not be right. You will do it my way.
That's exactly it. Mother has shown you shortcuts that are absolutely perfect, but not by the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so tedious.
Yeah. But I think it was more the fact that she didn't like the idea that somebody was confident in the kitchen already.
And what I'm hearing too is it's the 70s, it's the mid-70s, isn't it?
It is.
So, and Johann Bonnevie was known for his, you know, progression into teaching and engaging the student. And so away from this 3 R's, reading, writing, not away from reading, writing, arithmetic, but also bringing it across. Integrating and bringing in all this engagement, which is coming through. And so you've got some staff that are just fizzing with it.
They are.
And others that are, this is the way we've always done it and this is the way we'll do it.
That was the cooking teacher. Yes. the sewing teacher wasn't like that. Yeah. The cooking teacher was.
But doesn't it also illustrate the big thing of leadership?
Yes.
If you've got that good leadership. Mm,
that's right.
The other follows.
Mm, exactly, because a good leader, Johann Bonnevie was a good leader, enables the people that they're leading to be their best. Yes. And he was about developing his teachers and developing his students.
Mm, he was.
So after the initial culture shock of seeing so many children my own age, intermediate wasn't so bad. There was one girl there that learned it wasn't a good idea to try and pick on me and pull my hair. She got into a lot of trouble because I fought back. I only had to do it once.
Yeah. And Freiburg. So the young lady is launched after this, you know, Pinnens and Freiburg, and then you've left Freiburg or you leave Freiburg. Is anything...
Well, Freiburg was that was Noel Smith, who was the principal at Freiburg, and he was at the end of his career and was sort of struggling a bit. But the Freiburg High School was a big school back then. Again, a high school of over 1,500. Mm. And I was having to learn... the one thing I really remember from that was my mother, in her infinite wisdom, had filled in the paperwork and had enrolled me in the domestic stream because that's what she, in her mind, that's the level
Your
that
destiny.
I was at. Yes, my destiny. However, you know those tests that you do with kids before they go to high school?
Yes.
Apparently the high school read those and they called my parents into the office and said, "We refuse to allow you to do this. and made them enrol me in the professional stream, which is where I came, where I, and I'm sitting there going, pardon, what? You know, I had no idea what it was all about.
So domestic was?
Cooking.
Cooking, oh, cooking and?
Maybe a little bit of commercial, but the commercial stream was different again.
Oh, okay.
Domestic was the bottom level.
Oh, gosh, right? Okay.
And professional was, you know, you were taking six subjects and you were doing the languages and you were, yeah. And my mother was furious. She was furious.
Well, we'll leave it there.
This is part two. Listen next week for part three. Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website. And a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.